He always asks me for a title for my sermon, and I don't usually have one. But today's title is Seeing God Face to Face. First of all, look round at our banners. Unless you know them absolutely by heart, Jean, you needn't turn around. Who sees God unexpectedly? In the garden, Mary. On the road to Emmaus, no, they still don't see him. It's only when he breaks bread that Cleopas and his companion see Jesus. And of course, the Apostle Paul is blinded by the light from heaven. And the fourth banner, that road up to heaven. Are we going to see God face to face at the end of that road? I have to say that the place where I have mostly met people who say they have seen God is in the Warnford. Because we do not expect, as postmodern people, to see God. Indeed, there was a dread of seeing God face to face in the Old Testament. When Moses heard the voice of God from the burning bush, he was instructed to take off his sandals. And when he heard the voice of God, he hid his face. Moses went up Mount Sinai at least 10 times that are recorded in the Bible. And in Exodus 33, we read that Yahweh said to him, "You cannot see my face, because no one can see me and live." In 1 Kings 19, in a passage we're all familiar with from a hymn, if not from the Bible, God sends a wind, an earthquake, and a fire before there is a still, small voice. Elijah comes out of the cave where he was hiding and covers his face with his cloak when he hears what God has to say to him. However, we also read that the Lord spoke to Moses face to face as a man speaks to a friend. And in one chapter in Exodus, Moses comes down from the mountain from encountering God with a shining face from where he was exposed to the glory of God. And that made all the Israelites afraid of Moses. There are many examples of people in the Old Testament who did see God face to face and live. Because sometimes the Lord appeared as an angel or even as a human. God wrestled with Jacob, and Jacob named the place where it had happened Peniel, which actually means God's face, because he said, "I have seen God face to face and lived to tell the story." God appeared to Abraham to tell him that he and Sarah would have a son. So when you see God, and when you know definitely that it's God you have seen, it's called an epiphany. So that explains why Leslie read about Moses and Jesus' first sign recorded by John, which shows to his disciples, if no one else, that Jesus is indeed God. Because until then, they were just following a charismatic rabbi. Jesus is prompted by his mother, who, let's face it, has known the truth since his conception, to start to show his divinity. And he complies. All of a sudden, the extraordinary is found in the commonplace. Was it just a frivolous act? Or was a real point being made when we see water that's set aside for purification become something new and good? John's gospel, unlike the others, doesn't have bread and wine being shared at the Last Supper. Instead, it has the incident of the foot washing. And we'll come back to that in a minute. But first, let me assure you that even though John doesn't mention the Last Supper and Jesus sharing bread and wine, it is a sacramental document. And here we see Jesus turn water into wine. Later on, he's going to say he is the vine and we are the branches. He provides bread for 5,000 people from just five loaves. And we know there's an abundance provided because a dozen large baskets of leftovers were gathered up. Unlike the other gospel accounts, after this miracle, Jesus refers to himself as the bread of life. Many, many people obviously saw Jesus during his 3 years of ministry, but not all of them recognized him as God. Simeon had been told that he would not die without seeing the Messiah, and he just happened to be in the temple when Mary and Joseph brought the infant Jesus to be dedicated to God. Well, when I say he just happened, Simeon was led there, of course, by the Holy Spirit. And he was allowed to hold the baby, despite his advanced years. And he uttered famous, and I'm going to read them as old-fashioned words, "Lord, now lettest thou thy servant depart in peace, according to thy word. For mine eyes have seen thy salvation, which thou hast prepared before the face of all people, a light to lighten the Gentiles, and the glory of thy people Israel." We highly prize our communion services in the congregational tradition because we believe we are doing as Jesus commanded when he said, "This is my body given for you. Do this in remembrance of me." But the Christians of the Salvation Army, among others, do not celebrate Holy Communion, the Eucharist, the Lord's Supper, whatever various churches call it. They don't celebrate it at all. They pick up the idea from John's Gospel that the foot washing, in other words, service, is what was shown at Jesus' Last Supper before he was crucified. And many salvationists take it very literally. They work with people who have the stinkiest feet, those who live on the streets, those who are addicted to various substances, those who most of society ignore. I read the other day about a man called Marcel Roussel, who worked with the poor and needy in post-war France. His aim was to help people re-establish a dialogue with God. He did that for several years. And then in 1960, he opened a restaurant where missionary workers would live and shine as a light to the world. It was actually in Belgium, his first one. But then a chain of such restaurants grew, and Philip Yancey, who's the author whose book I was reading about it in, actually ate at the Agua Viva, the Water of Life, in Lima in 1987. Agua Viva was such a good restaurant, it began to attract the wealthy and powerful in Lima. There were subtle hints only of the restaurant's spiritual intent. The inside cover of the menu proclaimed, "Jesus lives, for this we are happy." And at 10 p.m., the waiting staff would sing a blessing. Apart from these clues, the woman in charge said, "The work itself should stand as witness. Don't ask us how our prayer life is going. Look at our food. Is your plate clean and artfully arranged? Does your server treat you with kindness and love? Do you experience serenity here? If so, then we are serving God." During the day, the people from the slums of Lima come to the same elegant room for classes on hygiene, childcare, physical and spiritual health, all of these funded by the profit of the evening restaurant. Serving people as service to God is nothing new. I'm going to finish by reading you the lyrics to a song, and trust me, you don't want to hear me sing it. It's about a monk from the 17th century called Brother Lawrence, and he was a cook in a monastery. "There's a rush in the kitchen, there are monks in the hall. It's past time for dinner, they are silent monks all. The cook is a good man with ladle and with plate. He will not be rushed in the steam and the heat. He hums to himself all the hymns he has known while he pulls up the leeks, they're so carefully grown. He doesn't like chapel, bent down on his knees, just wasting time with those words and decrees. He does all his work in the presence of the Lord. He is praying while salting the monk's holy food. He fights the good fight with utensils as a sword. He's peeling potatoes to the glory of God. Okay.